has this line, and it's better to be good consistently than great occasionally.
Yeah, yeah.
And I love that. And especially when we look at the context of this, like, none of us were really physically prepared for this. We go out and do this great thing, and it's like, that's a one-off. So we're just being great occasionally. And what will allow us to be good consistently is like going walking sets, like walking 7 days a week, training, building up for this. So you can do this amazing feat and not be injured and not have to question like, oh, should I pull out or should I keep going? Is this genuine pain and a like long-term injury, or is it just a little niggle?
Yeah. In 1837, Horace Mann created the education system, a system at the time designed to pump out factory workers and professors. The same system that is still being used today in the 21st century. Now, Mann's system is backfiring. We are being molded by the same industrial system that has existed for close to 200 years. That system delivers us into a digital economy that has no need of our outdated skills. This isn't our teachers' fault. This isn't the government's fault. This is due to a rapidly changing world full of technology and unforeseen circumstances. And us Gen Zs are caught in the middle. Welcome to the Driven Young Podcast, the podcast for stressed, overwhelmed young Australians, teaching you practical life skills you can implement now to set yourself up in life. And now your host, Byron Dempsey.
Welcome back to the Driven Young Podcast. Today I'm joined by Annalise and Josh. Say hello.
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 This is a triple. I've only done one triple episode, as in three people before, and that was like episode 10. Yes, so this is going to be a good one. And this is a niche episode. So last Saturday, almost a week from today, we went out for Friday night, we all went out to dinner. And then we hopped up at 3:30 in the morning to walk 80 kilometers from Bondi to Manly, which are two suburbs in Sydney. And it's a very beautiful walk. It's along the coast, but obviously it's a massive walk. And I guess I'll just give, you know, how it came together. And then I want to unpack the struggles we went through, what we learned from it all, and just get different perspectives and stuff. But I mean, the reason it came together is I've been walking. My mum discovered this walk, and she's practicing for a walk to walk the last 100 kilometers of the El Camino next year. And we've been walking 10 kilometers of it. So it breaks up into 10 kilometer chunks. And I remember I said to her, I was like, do you reckon anyone could do it in one day? She was like, whoa, that would be tough.
Saucy question.
And then later on, she sent me a photo of a screenshot that she found of people who had done it in one day. And I was like, okay, so it can be done. And then I was with Josh, and we were like, getting coffee at the sunrise. And I was just like, I want to try to do Bondi to Manly in one day. It's 80 kilometers. And in my head, I was like, you know, we could do it in a few months. And then I get a calendar invite 2 weeks later. And I was like, what's this, Josh? He says, we're making it happen.
We're doing it. Can I ask, interestingly, if you hadn't have found photos of people that had already done it, would you have still been like inclined to do it?
Yeah, definitely. But I think that it was just an afterthought. And then when she sent that photo, I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. And then I was like, okay, it is doable. Let's do it. I think, you know, 80 kilometers, I know that's a number that is doable. It just could take you a very long time and could be very difficult. And then, yeah, 2 weeks later, Josh and I organized it. We invited Pace. Pace invited you. And then a few of you, two other friends of yours, Josh, came along. And I guess I won't reveal what happens, but we attempted to walk the full 80 kilometers to Bondi to Manly. And yeah, I guess I just wanted to unpack what was going on in your guys' heads. What were the lessons we learned? And I guess just see where the wind takes us.
I'd actually love to start with the question that Josh asked before we started the walk, which was, why are we doing this? I think that's a great place to start.
Okay. Would you want to go first, Josh?
Yeah, for sure. I have to give credit to Pat. So he actually was thinking about that and like asked me that question. Mm. And my initial response was like, oh, it's just fun. But then as I like thought about it, I dove a bit deeper and I was like, oh, like, yes, it will be a fun challenge. However, there's more to it for me. So the night before we started, I was like laying on your couch at like 11:30 p.m. and I pulled my phone out notes and I wrote a note that read something like, I am like a block of high carbon steel, which is what most swords are forged out of. And I said, what good is that against the enemy? Tomorrow I'm going through the fire to be forged into a sword so that like I can defend against the enemy. And yeah, that was the why for me. It was just, wow. I want it to be forged through fire.
So poetic.
Yeah, it's very metaphorical, isn't it?
Yeah. What is the enemy in your eyes?
The enemy is, that's a good question. The enemy is kind of anything that stops me from being who I want to be, I think.
There's a quote, I can't remember what it is, but it's like, the most terrifying thing is when you die, you get to meet the person who, the best version of yourself, or the person who had the most potential.
Yeah.
And is it someone completely different to you, or is it someone that's similar to you?
Wow, that's so powerful.
And that's kind of similar to like the way, because even just the way you thought about it is like you put it into a sword metaphor. Like it makes it very tangible.
Definitely.
Like, what's my why? This is it.
This Great. Is it.
Instead of being like, oh, it's kind of airy fairy. I have some ideas, but like, this is it.
This is it. And it makes it easier when you're going through the fire, because when you're in the fire, you're like, okay, I know I'm meant to be here, because on that, like, this is the process to becoming a sword. I need to be in it.
I remember now, because he kept mentioning swords on the walk. The fuck is this guy on about? Like, what are you talking about, swords? So now I get it. Okay. Yeah.
He said the metaphor in his head, forgot to tell us about the metaphor. Yeah.
And then he's kept referencing. You're a sword, Annalise. I'm like, I'm a what? You're a wizard.
Yeah. No, you told me. I think maybe he missed it, but he did say, like, oh, I did some research.
I'm sure he did. I was just very deranged, probably missed that part.
But what about you? What was your why?
Yeah, well, the reason I bring it up in the first place, because I remember when you asked, I was quite like hit with it of, oh, wow, I should actually really get clarity on this because I know it's really going to serve me throughout the walk. For me personally, and I remember telling Josh, I did it because I didn't want to.
Mm.
And that was literally the only reason I did it. I don't think I would ever willingly choose to walk 80 kilometers in a day. I'm not going to say I don't have, I'm learning to have a mentality that wants to embrace challenges like that and be positive about it. But in that current state of mind, nothing about me found it exciting or like, fuck yeah, let's do it. Like I just didn't have that mentality. And so for me, one of my absolute pillars with the work that I do is discomfort leads to growth. And so I knew for a fact that putting myself in a situation that was very uncomfortable was inevitably going to result in something positive. So that I think was a big why for me of like, just do it because it's going to result in something and we'll find out what that something is when we get to it.
I think also you were in more of a unique situation where like, I guess Josh and I kind of like organized this, put it together for you. It was just
very
like,
last minute.
I've got this opportunity to get wildly out of my comfort zone.
Yeah.
And I don't have to do any work. I can just plug straight into it.
It's funny because the TikTok video I posted of the vlog that I did for it, I had all these questions of like, oh my God, how did you train for this? Like, what did you do? And I'm like,
nothing.
I didn't because I did it so last minute. And what's funny, I remember saying this to you, if I had known about the walk weeks prior, I probably would have talked myself out of it or found an excuse to not do it.
It's super interesting there because like there's an element of physical preparation. And when it's events like that, really do it properly, you should spend like a good amount of time, a couple of months, if not more, physically preparing yourself. And then there's the mental prep and you get confidence like mentally from the physical prep. But when you don't have that physical prep, it's like, you can either have one of two ways where if you have a couple of weeks where you know about it mentally, you can like really try to hone in on it. Or as you said, like you can talk yourself out of it and be like, no, this isn't right. I shouldn't do it.
Yeah.
So for me personally, I find mentally, I love like a little bit of time to prep. Like whether it's, had like a couple of weeks and I can just zone in, back right. Like this day, I signed a contract with myself. I'm walking 80 kilometers.
Yeah.
No ifs, ands, or buts. Like I'm
and
doing
even
it.
Even then, we were quick. Yeah. It was like a week and a half probably from when we put the date in. Or like
definitely,
2 weeks. But I do. That's a huge issue I'm seeing with young people in general. Like we spoke about like Empower You, which is a program I help Ryan and Annalise is on board with. And you've attended it, Josh. We're getting so many people dropping off on the day.
Yeah.
Yes, COVID and the flu is going around, but I also think people are using that as a bit of a scapegoat. Obviously, some people genuinely have it. It's always hard to tell. But I do think giving them time to sit, you start to talk yourself out of it. You start overthinking.
For sure.
And that's just the nature of how it is.
Yeah, well, I think it's your knee-jerk reaction to fear. It's how does your body obviously like kicks into fight or flight. And it's like, I don't want to do this. So the easiest option is to just not do it. But for me, interestingly, having time, and we'll come to you with your why, but having time for me to reflect on it since, I realized so much of my life, because you mentioned before mental, the walk for me now, and I'm sure we'll touch on this, was so much more about mental discipline than physical discipline. I'm sure you can all agree. But for me, in my life, I've applied a lot of mental discipline to study and to business. And so I'd never done it to some kind of physical challenge. And so I think where my almost absence of faith came in, or my moments of doubt in the walk, was because I was literally in terrain that I hadn't, that I hadn't been in before, because I, you know, was used to cramming for an exam, or I was used to doing all nights to, you know, help my business survive or whatever it might be. But in terms of actually just taking one step after the other to push yourself through something that was physically draining, it was something I hadn't experienced before. So I think that's why it was so challenging at the time. What was your why?
I mean, it's just a challenge. I guess for me, I guess contrasted to you, I guess I think it's also part of being a guy. We get pushed physically out of our comfort zone. It's just more of a culture. Like you were the only girl on the walk, right? Mm. Could we have found another girl? I honestly don't think I could have. Who would want to do it? Mm. And so for me, I guess that's something my dad's always conditioned me to be doing. Like, you know, when we go mountain biking, it was always like, you're at the top of the hill, there's only one way down. That's it. There's no going back. It's one way down.
Yeah.
And so I've just, for me, that was that. And I feel like I haven't got out of my comfort zone in a while. I hadn't done something that was challenging physically in a long time, especially since, you know, I stopped playing sport since I started running power use on the weekend, which means I couldn't do sport, which means I just haven't found time to do outside of the gym, which is not, you know, it's just lifting weights. And it's not
endurance.
It's not endurance. Yeah. It's not long-term. There's no mental real battle in the gym, mm. except for like the last two weights or something, but it's over. Yeah. And
it's a very short amount of time. Like, yeah. The average gym session, if you're there for like an hour, the average time that you're under load is about 11 minutes.
Really?
Which wow. is not long. And right. when you think we were walking for 20 hours, like yeah. that's 20 hours under load versus 11 minutes. So
yeah.
night and day.
Exactly. And so, yeah, I guess it was just, I don't know, just something I wanted to, I didn't have a huge powerful why. I just wanted to challenge myself.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to see if I could do it.
I tell you what though, I actually question whether I could have done it if I did it solo.
Oh, I don't think I would have. Like, no, definitely not.
I think having a group, and also such a motivating and, you know, disciplined group. I had a moment, like you remember, just before the Harbour Bridge, where I could feel internally, because the Harbour Bridge was my mental goal.
Yeah.
So I knew my commitment when I started the walk from Bondi. I was like, if I can yeah. get to the Harbour Bridge, that is huge.
And then that's about 35 kilometers.
That was about 35 yeah. Ks in. Yeah. So I was like, if I can do
almost
that.
Almost halfway.
Yeah, almost. So I was yeah. like, if I can do that, that's amazing. And it was like a physical milestone as well. And like crossing over, it's very metaphorical. So I was yeah. like, yes, amazing. Just before we got to the bridge, I had this moment of like internal panic where I realized, is my body about to give up because I'm about to reach my goal? Like,
yeah, that
am
is,
I going to give in after the bridge because I've reached the goal that I set for myself? Mm, and it was, yeah.
A real factor for yeah. sure.
It was this moment of panic almost where I had so much shame isn't the right word, but I was very disheartened and I was like, I actually wonder whether I can finish it or whether I can do this. And it was really emotional for me. I was really proud to like get to that point. I think for me walking over the bridge, that was my first real like moment where I connected with the purpose yeah. of the walk. What was your first moment like that, Josh? Did you have one?
Yeah, I think, man, the whole walk for me was amazing.
Yeah.
Start to finish, it was a wild experience.
Can I just say as well, what a bloody trooper you were the whole time. I remember saying to Byron afterwards, I did not hear you complain once on the walk.
Mm, yeah. Like
at all. I didn't hear any negativity. I didn't hear any words of doubt. You were just this, like, for lack of a better word, sword for the whole team. And you just kept soldiering on. Like, you were just so amazing.
Yeah, it was amazing. Like, I think I'm not an endurance athlete by any sorts, but I've done like a lot of endurance events,
yeah.
like some bikepacking, big hikes, run a marathon, things like that, triathlon. And
what was your biggest up until this? In a day.
Kilometer wise, that was the biggest walk I'd done. I've like did a 10-day bikepacking trip, which was the hardest thing I've done. That was 1,000 Ks, 10 days,
oh my gosh.
24,000 meters elevation gain. Mm. Like that was wild. And for me, it's like, it's the 10 days. All it is time. My friend says to me, when you've done enough hard things in life, it stops becoming hard. It just becomes long.
Yeah, right.
So it's time spent during it. It's just long. I've been there before. I know what the pain is. Yes, new niggles and twigs will come up, but it's just long. So for me, mentally going into this, I'm like, right, I know it's going to be long. I know it's going to be hard. Unexpected things will pop up. But also, I'm walking. And it was the first time I'd ever done a long walk without a lot of weight on my back, because usually I'd go hiking.
Yeah.
So that was so nice to just like feel the effects of not having like 20, 30 kilos on my back. And as we were walking, honestly, for me, everything changed when I like hung back and waited for you and Dale at the Spit Bridge, like just after the Spit Bridge.
Which is like 60 kilometers in.
Yeah, about 60K in. So
it's nighttime as well.
It's nighttime. Yeah. Head torches are out, which is a completely different dynamic as well.
Yeah.
Because you go from seeing everything, having all this stimulus, to all of a sudden, like this little patch of light in front of you, that's yeah. your world.
That's it.
Yeah. Everything else outside of that is your imagination, because it's so dark you can't see.
Yeah.
So it's kind of cool where you can hone into this little circle and you pay more attention to the rocks mm-hmm. and the dirt and the leaves. But then you also let your mind wander as you just look out into the unknown. And then seeing you guys come, I was like, oh my goodness, Annie is like, wow,
ruined.
She's doing it really, really tough.
Yeah.
And just to highlight like how tough you were doing it. Like you were, Dale was like basically supporting you.
Yeah.
You were taking one step at a time. Like it was clear that your mind was like, all right, I have to focus on one step. That's all I have left is one step. You kept going and it was like every step was just agony. Like it was your glutes, I think you were saying, and your hips.
Yeah, I was just like in so much physical pain. I was exhausted. Like I was so tired. We established I hadn't eaten enough during the day, so I was like low on fuel.
I ripped into Annie afterwards. I think that was a really silly
thing. You don't know what you don't know. And I'd never done it before, so I didn't know how to prep, but I know for next time. I've never experienced such a physical low.
I mean, to give clarity, like Annie was pretty much gone by the bridge. I mean, I think it's interesting the point you made, like were you worried your body is going to give up once you hit this goal? Because that's what the body does. It's like, it's even when I have to go to the toilet, as soon as I'm within range of a toilet, bang, I got to go. If I'm nowhere to go, my body knows I don't need, I can't go. And so, you know, by setting the goal of the bridge, I think you're better off to set a milestone. Because if you do set that goal, there is a part of you that goes, am I just going to like, I get across a bridge, then my body goes, that's it, done.
Yeah. Well, I remember this is what Josh told me, which was like everything on the day, man, you were just so, you were such an angel. But I remember he said to me, and this will stick with me forever now, is he was like, Annie, if you're focusing on the 40Ks and you're focusing on the 80Ks and getting to Manly, you're never going to get there. Like, take it one step at a time. Focus at getting to the top of the stairs, then focus to getting to the end of the street, then focus on getting to the next tree. My focus after the Harbour Bridge completely shifted, because rather than focusing on, oh my God, we've got to get to Balmoral next, and that's 20Ks away, it was, let's get to the bottom of the stairs. Okay, great, now let's turn the corner. And it became these little bite-sized goals that every time I did it, it gave me a little bit of confidence of, oh, okay, I did it, I can keep going. And I feel like that was a real game changer for me.
That'll cripple you if you're doing the, 20 kilometers ago, 10 kilometers ago. Like, because for me, I was like, I'm just keen to hang out with, I was like, it's gonna be fun. Like, I didn't actually think about the distance at all. I was just like, oh, I'm just here to have fun. Like, it's a nice walk. I just kept walking. I really, because I know as soon as you get stuck in that trap, because I've done a lot of mountain biking, and it's like, you can be, when you're going up a hill and you're in so much pain, and like dad's always just like, just get to the next spot, then the next spot. Don't worry about it. Because you can see, like I did like a rail trail and you can see like kilometers in front of you.
Yeah.
At least this one, like, you know, the head torch was a good point. You're just one step. But when you can see kilometers in front of you and where you're supposed to go, like mentally, that's so hard because you're like, how'd I ever get there?
And I feel like that's why I'm so grateful. I did a lot of gratitude journaling on Monday from the experience, and I'm so grateful that I finished the last bit in the dark. I'm so grateful that I couldn't see the path, because if I had seen how far I had to go, I may have made the executive decision to just not do it.
That last part, I had no idea how far that last part was.
That was really challenging. For people who don't know, the last section of the walk, you're basically going from Spitbridge in Sydney and then round the back of Clontarf and Balgala Heights to Manly, and it's this completely was dark, so there's no lighting on the trail, but it's just all bush and terrain and stairs and stones and steps, and it goes for about 15k,
12-13. Like, also this is 80 kilometers. It's not flat, it's a very hilly,
see, that's what I forgot. I think I was expecting like, okay, a flat walk isn't that bad, but it was up and down the whole way, like the streets, hills, like the stairs. It was really tough terrain.
What was because I've only told Dale this, but like there's a point where, I mean, when we started the walk, right, we were like super good pace. It was dark. We're all excited. And I remember I was kind of joking. I was like, oh man, we're going to crush this. We're like, this is going to be easy, because we were like so far ahead of where we had to be. And then we slowed down a lot. And when you got across a bridge, you were like in heaps of pain, and you were like, and I was mentally like, all right, once Annie gets across, she's going to go and then we can keep walking. Because you had said, I just want to make it to the bridge. And then you decided to keep going. And I haven't told you this, but I was like so close to saying, Annie, you're going to have to leave. Because like our pace had dropped so much. And I was like, we're just not going to make it at this point. And then I think my mum kind of came in with some drugs and some stuff, and bang, you kind of had a second wind, and we were like, we were good to go again. But yeah, that was like, for me, you got so close to like having to kick you off the walk. Because our pace had gone from like 6 to like 3 or something.
And I was very conscious of that. And this was the internal battle crossing the bridge, is because a part of me felt a lot of guilt that I had slowed the team down. And I think when you're doing something as a pact and you're doing something as a team, you never want to be the one that causes everybody to fall behind. But also I knew, like, I'm almost halfway. I kept saying out loud, like, it'd be so stupid for me to stop now. Like, just keep going, see how far you can go. And honestly, if your mum hadn't have come with the ibuprofen.
Mum freaking, she came in clutch.
She's superwoman. like Karen, you're an absolute legend. Like, she came in and just saved the day. Like, it was, I think, being able to take some like painkillers and, you know, feel my legs properly again and then get something to eat, and my spirit just perked up.
Mm.
And I felt like when everybody else hit a low, I hit a high, and I was like, all right, team, like, come on, like, let's.
Yeah.
Which is so important when you're part of a team. Like, as you were saying, you were carrying guilt. Like, you're carrying that. That is more weight added to you, which is slowing you down even more. Yeah. I think the most important thing you can do when it's like team orientated is any doubts you have. Like, for me personally, I find like for me to voice this right now is not going to do any good, because like, I know the pain I'm in, somebody else is in as well. And if I voice that, then it makes it okay for them to voice it as well. And I'm not saying don't voice your pain, but when it's events like this where it's like everyone wants to finish, then it's like, oh, that's an excuse now for us to stop. Yeah. We can justify that. So I personally find I just keep myself locked in. Like, if I feel pain, cool. I know I have that pain. I know everybody else is feeling pain in their own way. I'm just going to shut up and keep walking. And I think as well, it comes to, like, I didn't know you guys in terms of, like, your mental ability to push through, like, physical stuff. Like, I know you're very successful in what you're doing career-wise, and, like, you have that drive and determination and that motive. So that is amazing. But when it came to this, I wasn't sure. I knew everyone was capable of finishing. I just didn't know if we all would.
To what extent, yeah.
So seeing that, I'm like, okay, like when you were hurting at the Harbour Bridge, I'm like, I know Annie can finish, but I don't know if she will. Like, I don't know if she wants it bad enough. So that's where for me, it was just like trying to like say anything to you to get you motivated, to give like a bit of fuel to your fire.
Yeah.
And then just seeing you take those little nuggets and run a mile with it was so amazing. It was so encouraging.
Oh, thank you.
I think it's, I mean, as you mentioned, would you have done it solo? I absolutely don't think I could have done it solo.
How come?
I think it takes the fun out of it. For me, I mentioned the fun of it was talking with you guys, having conversations, you know, laughing, playing music while like enjoying the journey. Mm-hmm. If it was just to do the 80 kilometers, it's like, oh, it's no longer, I think I could do it now. I think I could definitely do it now, having, and I know I'm much more prepared. Mm-hmm. But yeah, also just like my knee went really early, which is causing me heaps of pain. I already said to you, I caught it going to a bit of a victim spiral in my head, which is where, because my, like 16 kilometers, we were walking down a hill and my knee was in so much pain. I was like, far out, this is ridiculous. We're only not even a quarter of the way in. And I hadn't had this pain before. So I was like, is this a genuine pain? Should I actually stop before I injure myself? I can't afford to be, you know, not walking for a few weeks. Or is it just something I need to work through? And I was like, I'll work through it and we'll see how we go for the next few kilometers and keep going and stuff. And then I kept seeing you guys were like jumping around, laughing, kind of running, and I couldn't do any of that. And I was just like, they're going to finish this because they're not in pain. I'm not going to finish it because I've got something wrong with my knee. And that's true. At that point, I don't know what you guys got going through, but like you didn't seem to have anything going wrong except for just the sore legs. And so I got caught in my head. I was like, oh, the reason they can finish it and I won't is because I've got something wrong with my knee, which is true. But also that's such a bad mindset to have.
The worst thing you can tell yourself, because it's, then again, you justify
it's justifying.
You stopping. You validate the belief.
Which is what I talk about, the above line, below line. It's like so many people make excuses that are justified, and that's the most dangerous thing. Mm. I was justified in pulling out. Any of us would have been justified in pulling out. Mm. We could have pulled out and said, oh, I don't want to injure myself or whatever.
I'll tell you the crossroad for me, and God bless your mum. She turned around when she was about to leave and she was like, do you want to come with me?
Mm.
Or.
And I remember in that moment, I saw the sliding door and it was like either I leave with Karen and I go home and I shower and I eat and I get into bed and I relax, or I stay and I push through this and I see how far I can go.
Mm.
And that moment out of the whole walk was the moment where I was the most internally conflicted.
Yeah.
Like her offer was so genuine and so out of love, but it really challenged me where I had to go against my gut instinct. And I want to touch on this actually when you mention above the line, below the line. I feel like for young people in particular, there are so many quick fixes and easy ways out. And I feel like one of the reasons I experienced shame and guilt on the walk is because I was being confronted with all the thoughts that so willingly came up that said give up. And I'm someone that prides myself on like being able to work really hard and like persevere through things. So the fact that kept coming up over and over again, I was like, whoa, like hold on, this isn't me. And it made me realize like, well, every single time hardship comes up, it's very easy and it's very frequent for people to just not push through.
We have too many outs now.
We have so many outs now.
That's that story I share with Jesse Martin. who sailed, the youngest person at the time to sail around the world solo. And he got asked the question, how come you didn't give up? And he said, I gave up about 10 times, except every time I gave up, I'd start sailing to land, then I'd start feeling better. The dolphins would jump out of the water and suddenly, you know what? I can do this. And he said, a big reason I think too many people can't make it today is because when they give up, they've got too many exits and they're just gone. Yeah. He only had a satellite phone. If he had the technology today, he might've given up because he could just pull out really easily. This is 1999. So that is a huge part. And that's such a good one, like saying, do you want to come with me? Because that was a point where I was like, that was kind of the point where I was about to say, like, if you had said yes, I don't think any of us would have questioned you. You might have?
Yeah.
I would have been like, yeah, go, Annie. You're clearly in so much pain. We've been slowing down a lot. This could be good for the group to pick up the pace. After that, you really went up. Yeah, sorry.
All good. I always have it in my mind because, like, when there's that out, there's always a question for me that follows, and it's, how do I feel if I take that out? How do I feel? So, an easy thing for me that I do quite often, last year when I was training for the triathlon, I was doing a lot of swimming, obviously, because it's a part of it. I would go after work, middle of winter, you know, it's dark, 6 o'clock, 6 p.m., raining, cold, the water's freezing, and I get to the pool, nobody's there. Dip my toes in, like, my feet are hanging in, and the water is, like, numbingly cold. And I'm sitting there like, I really don't want to swim. I'm in budgies. Like, I wouldn't allow myself to wear a wetsuit. Just that's my mind. I like to do it as hard as I possibly can. So I'm there and that voice is, the out's always there. Josh, get back in your car, go home, have a warm shower, have some dinner. Like, nobody knows. No one will know that you didn't do this. And you don't have to because nobody's here. But that's where the question comes
in.
You
will know.
How do I feel? How do I feel if I get up and walk out of here?
And then every time you do that, you just justify how you feel.
Exactly.
And I think this is where having, yes, with people, but if any of us were with a different group, we might not have made it. Because if we were with a different group that wasn't trying to push as hard, everyone could have just been like, oh yeah, that's all right, you're fine. And this is what I think a lot of people see. They think they're trying to be a nice person by being nice at first, but long term you're hurting that person. And I've found this with like some of the friends I have. It's like, I can come across as like with Nat. Like with her content stuff, I'll say it as it is to her. And I know that makes her feel a bit crap, but it's like, it's either that or you just long term. I can sit here and be like, oh no, that's okay. Blah, 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 blah.
Well, I think the people you want to surround yourself with are the people who want you to grow and want you to be the best version of yourself. And I think those people truly understand that sometimes tough love is the best kind of love. And if you surround yourself with people who buddy you up constantly and only tell you what you want to hear, are you in an environment where you're conditioned to grow? Like, my job as a coach is not to be your best friend, despite me wanting to be best friends with all my clients, and we end up always being best friends. But despite that, my job is to make you the best version of yourself. And sometimes that is a really difficult thing to do because I have to tell you things you don't want to hear.
Every time, probably.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah,
I mean,
pretty much. But one thing, what you were mentioning before about the cold water.
Yeah, and just I need to say I never left. I never left the pool. I always got in and did my laps because I never want to meet that guy that doesn't do the thing that I know I want to do. God, and I know
such
I can
a
do.
Brilliant mentality. Oh, Josh, I'm such a fan. Yeah. But you left another nugget of wisdom. We're going to call them Josh's nuggets of wisdom. When I was really broken, I think it was when you met me in the dark at Spit Bridge. I think it was then, or might have been before, but you asked me, can you take one more step? Okay. Can you take one more step after that step? Okay, so just keep asking yourself that as long as you need to until you can't take any more. And I imagine with the cold water, can I push my foot a little bit further in? Yes. Okay, could I get my leg in? I could. All right, fuck it, let's do the whole thing.
Can I start swimming? Yeah. And that's it.
Especially for swimming, because you know you're going to warm up as you start swimming.
Exactly.
And I feel like that is, because I had, and I think it's a fair point, I had a lot of comments on my TikTok with people being like, well, that's stupid, you'd injure yourself, like don't push yourself beyond your limits. When you're very in tune with your body in that sense, if the response to can I take one more step is a genuine no, like I'm actually going to hurt my, like with your knee, if that was the pain of I actually think that this is causing me detriment rather than doing me good, then of course there are limits. But
it's just finding that balance.
It is. It's all about.
Which is so hard because like even like it was a week ago and my knee's like hasn't really improved at all. It's still pretty bad. So we'll see how it goes. I think it'll be fine. But yeah, it is finding that balance of I want to push myself to my absolute limit, but I don't want to be silly and injure myself.
And that's where Nick Baer, who's an American like entrepreneur and like athlete, he has this line, and it's better to be good consistently than great occasionally.
Yeah, yeah.
And I love that, and especially when we look at the context of this, like none of us were really physically prepared for this. So we go out and do this great thing, and it's like that's a one-off. So we're just being great occasionally. And what will allow us to be good consistently is like going walking, say it's like walking 7 days a week, training, building up for this. So you can do this amazing feat and not be injured and not have to question like, oh, should I pull out or should I keep going? Is this genuine pain and a like long-term injury or is it just a little niggle?
Yeah.
So I think when you can actually be consistent and good, that's when you're going to eliminate all those issues of injury. Yeah. Because I find personally for me, like I struggle with the side of going too far. Like for me, it's never the question of should I stop? It's like, no, I'm going as far as it takes. And then I pay all the consequences later when my body's injured and broken. And I'm like,
I mean, I kind of rate that when you're 20, you know, when you're in your early 20s, it's like, cause what's too far? I mean, you might be sore you might be out for a week or two. Like really, unless you're like breaking bones or like really genuinely injuring yourself properly, too far is probably just going to be strain on your body, which just can recover. And so I'm like, if now's the time to do it, there's no better time. Like you probably can't do that when you're 40.
Can I ask, because I feel like it would be a value to a lot of people that are listening. That mentality is not the norm, I would say. There aren't a lot of people that push themselves to their limits in that way or have that kind of mental discipline. How did that form and where did that come from?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Thank you. I'm full of good questions.
Yeah, you are. I would have to say the origins of it were probably, I've always been super competitive and I'm really, really stubborn. As I've grown older, I've learned to like choose where to be stubborn. I think there's times when I'm just being like stupidly stubborn and I pull myself out of those.
Like David Goggins, pick your hard, pick your stubborn.
Yeah, no, honestly. And now I'd say I'm pretty good at that. But when it comes to the physical stuff, I love the push. I love being in that moment because I'm like, all right, where's my breaking point? Like, at what point do I say I'm completely done and I cannot take another step? And like, I'm yet to find it. There's been points where I've really been struggling in life and in my physical things that I do, but I haven't found my breaking point. So that's kind of what I'm chasing. And in terms of the mentality, I just know like it was David Goggins, it was Cameron Haynes, those sorts of people, Nims Diaperja, like big influences in my life that just gave me this curiosity and desire to find out like what it is that I can actually do. And that's where I learn the most about myself. When I'm out on these trips, it's almost like living, like in that 80 kilometer walk, the 20 hours we were walking, it's almost like you live 4, 5, 6 months of regular life in those 20 hours. That's the way I put it. It's just this compact, condensed highs and lows. Like the lows are so low and the highs are so high. Yeah. So you really learn a lot.
You'll experience more in that 20 hours than a lot of people will in months. Sort of just like the same thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's where like, I mean, obviously for me, I guess I'm trying to build myself up. Personal development isn't just business and everything I do. Like it all connects. If you can be mentally tough in the walk, that's going to help you be mentally tough when it comes to business. And you get, because business is highs and lows as well. Like massive, massive highs and massive, massive lows. And so I think it all kind of comes together. I also think as young people, it's like during your 20s, it's like this is what we should be doing. You should be pushing your body to the limit, your mental to the limit, to see where your limits are. So then you can like slow it down and figure out your body as you get older. But this, I think there's no better time to do it.
Yeah, I think a big thing as well is like seek good influences. Like even talking about like David Goggins and stuff, yes, like you can look at celebrities or like people that are doing amazing things. But even in your inner circle, like I've met so many people who just become so negative and so crippled by their environment because they have really toxic friends or because they have people that don't believe in them or because they've lost their drive because they're surrounded by people that aren't motivated. Like I remember when I found out I was actually going to do the walk, which I think was like Friday night when I was like, yeah, okay, I'm going to do it. I'm going to come. I'm going to regret it if I'm spending the day on Saturday doing work and I know you guys are walking. So I knew I wanted to do it.
And that's what I was saying. You had a very different scenario to us because you could just kind of go in and out, whereas we couldn't go out.
Yeah.
And so you almost had a...
Another sliding
another,
door.
Another, what was it?
Sliding door.
Yeah, another sliding door, another easy out opportunity.
No, 100%. But it made me think like, I remember such a turning point for me, and I say this very genuinely, the people that I walked with, being you guys and everyone else, like are such top people, like all just so phenomenal in their own right, so mentally disciplined. The fact that we chose to do this and like organized to do this, wanted to push ourselves to our limits, wanted to grow through it, wanted to support each other, I know in my soul, those are the types of people that I want to be around because I know that those are the types of the people that, like I said before, will bring out the best in me, but also will push me in the right way to grow where I need to go. And so I think for me, the people that you surround yourself with are everything. And they will make or break your mentality and your discipline and your self-confidence.
Yeah, it's do they challenge you? That's a great question to ask, like, your friends and yourself about your friends.
A good reflective question, yeah.
Do your friends challenge you?
Another question a question to ask myself, but something I've realized is, like, the immediate, like, six people in my life, it's like, I respect all of them. I respect what they do. And there's a lot of my friends that I didn't. Like, I like them. They're great people, but I don't respect what they're doing with their life. And I'm not really friends with those people anymore. That's kind of, you know, that's like high school, you know, whatever. That's back in the day. But yeah, I think the immediate people, like, do you respect what your friends are doing? I think it's a really important thing. Like, do you just respect them as a person, their values, what they're doing with their life? And yeah, on that walk, I do respect. I mean, I don't know a hell of a lot about the other two guys because we just met them, but I respect them.
Mad respect, yeah. I do want to point out for people listening that are in school, I understand it is a privilege to pick and choose your friends. Like, I remember in my school, you were put into a group and then that was your group. Like, you couldn't leave. Love girl schools. And so you were kind of with the same group for 6-7 years and that's how it.
I think this happens that way organically as well.
I know, but I think that the bad thing about it is that often you're with people you don't want to be with in the first place.
Totally.
So what I'd say for that is find things that you can do outside of that environment where you can surround yourself with people that you do enjoy being with, like hobbies and like groups and challenges, whatever it might be outside of that group, where you can still feel supported and fulfilled in a different way that you don't get from your other friends.
I think as well, a lot of people, they're friends with people they don't want to be friends with just because they're familiar. So like the
comfort zone,
the people we grew up with, like I had the same group of mates pretty much since I was 4 or 5 years old all the way till I was like 16, 17, and it's familiar just because I've known them my entire life. We've hung out 16 years. And it gets to a point in life where I was questioning a lot about myself and who I am. And I started like forward thinking and projecting like, okay, where do I want to be in 10 years, 20 years, 30 years? And where are these guys going to be in 10, 20, 30, 40 years? And answer is we'll never truly know. But based off their behaviors currently, you can make a prediction. So I made that prediction and I was like, that is not where I want to be. So I'm going to go and find some like new friends to hang out with. And it wasn't like I'm leaving these guys, ditching them. Like, they're really nice guys. I value them. I love them. But they're just not my people. Yeah. So I was very intent to find people that are challenging me, people that I respect, and people that are just going to help me grow into the person that I want to be. And when you find those people, that's the best thing ever. And it was, as you said, like get a part-time job. For me, it was Macca's, working at Macca's. You go from like knowing the same people in your school to having, you know,
a new network.
Yeah, a new network. Yeah. Just so many people from different schools around your age.
This is what I talk about when I pitch, because my program's all about that, like bringing people together, right? And in the pitch, I talk about, like, I've discovered a lot of reasons why people don't seem to have these friendships. Because I share the story how, like, a photo from the 1970s. So my grandma and my granddad, who passed away before I was born, they were part of the Sydney Metro Scooter Club. So, like, scooters. And they go scootering all around Australia.
What?
And literally...
Like a scooter?
Yeah, scooters.
That's so cool.
He had, like, a sidecar and, like, motorbikes and scooters.
Oh, my gosh.
And that was their community. And so for years and years, and now 50 years later, every single year for the last 50 years, my grandma has hosted the barbecue and they all come and catch up for a year. And it's always landed on my grandma. So we have to freaking, every year we're like scrambling to like put together this big barbecue. But yeah, there's like a photo. It's like 50 years of friendship. And I'm just like, how is that? It's come from a community of a common interest. And I just feel like, and like scouts, right? Scouts or even church or whatever it is. I feel like there's not many communities for us to plug into. In fact, there's none that I can think of that I was kind of born into in Sydney, at least. You know, if you're not religious, you don't have church. And then there's scouts, but then scouts has kind of become cringy, which is sad because I think it would be awesome. Like, I wish I did scouts, but I was just like, I don't want to do scouts. That's embarrassing. Like,
definitely.
And I did a little bit. Like, we did a little bit of sailing and stuff, but I never fully got into it. So I think, we've kind of gone off the rails, but it is important finding communities.
100%. Can I ask, because I feel like the walk was a lot about stepping outside of your comfort zone. Right. So obviously the walk was not, I would argue it wasn't a comfort zone for any of us.
No.
Am I right in saying that?
Not after 15 Ks.
Yeah.
Not after 15 Ks, right. If we know that there's value in stepping outside of your comfort zone, what is something you would recommend that people do or could do each week to step outside of their comfort zone to kind of expand that muscle a little bit and get more familiar with the uncomfortable?
I think it's just being consciously aware of getting outside your comfort zone. And then there's always going to be opportunities every week to get outside your comfort zone.
Every day, every minute. Starting small as well. Like, we all have different things. Like, for an introvert, it might be talking, like just asking the person at the cafe, how are you going? How was your day? Not just, can I grab a latte?
Yeah.
And then maybe for an extrovert, it's spending time with yourself, writing a gratitude list of how your day went. I think everyone kind of knows what it is they do and don't like. So just find that thing you don't like and just do that. And
yeah.
I think it's super important to highlight as well. It's all about starting really, really small.
I think the easiest on to how do you do what Josh just said? I think the easiest way for anyone is wake up half an hour earlier. Whatever time you set your alarm, wake up half an hour earlier. That's half an hour to do whatever you want. There's no distractions. No one's going to stop you. There's no excuse as well. There's no, I can't wake up half an hour. No, everyone in the world can wake up half an hour earlier. Like you cannot find me anyone. I was saying like in terms of the internal discipline, when Josh was talking about swimming, I was thinking, when have I done that? I think the biggest one for me was I did 5:30 club for 8 months every single day. I woke up at 4:55 for 8 months straight. I didn't miss a single day. I didn't do weekends. Sometimes I did. But I remember once I got like 20 days, I was like, oh, I've got a bit of a rhythm going here. I don't want to break that. And that was just my internal like gamifying way of like, and no one knew I was going to break it.
Yeah.
Actually, I did start telling people. I was like, hey, I'm on day 45. Because like that way,
public accountability.
If I miss one, they'll be like, oh, you've broken it.
Yeah.
And so like, I'd get to home at 12 and I'm like, there's no way I'm waking up at 4:55. Yeah. But I'd wake up at 4:55, make it happen. And so, yeah, I think gamifying it.
Yeah.
But it's really just being comfortable with internally doing it for yourself and not for anyone else. Yeah. Like if you find yourself posting on social media, that's a trap. I wasn't, I posted 5:30 club on social media, but I wasn't going, hey guys, day 55, day 56, like look at what I'm doing and all that stuff.
What are the reasons you're doing it?
I think it's fine to post on social media, but like if that's the reason you're doing it, that's a trap.
I just wanted to touch on very quickly. I know you have something to say as well. In terms of waking up early. So Mel Robbins, who I absolutely adore.
Yeah, she's great.
Please, I just love you so much. She had a video where she was like, all right, so a lot of people struggle getting up early. Let me tell you the way that I think about it. And it's brilliant. And she's like, when I go to bed and I set my alarm, that is me making a promise to myself that I will wake up the next morning when that alarm goes off. The next morning when you wake up and you press snooze or you ignore that alarm, that is you breaking a promise to yourself. And when she put it in those words, I realized how powerful that is, because such a small thing. Every day is just about like building habits, right? But more importantly, building trust in yourself, trust that you can do something, trust that you can actually fulfill a challenge or something that you set out to do. If you take an easy way out, if you press snooze, if you don't follow through, you're losing that trust and that respect in yourself over time because you're unable to fulfill the promises that you've made. And I feel like that was a really powerful way to look at it.
Yeah, definitely. And then the accountability kind of fades away as you start to fall off because, you know, when you hit that snooze the first time, you feel that initial guilt and shame. Yeah. But as you do that day by day and you keep hitting that snooze, it becomes a habit and there's no guilt anymore.
And it's just because it's a norm.
Which is the dangerous place. I think Jocko Willink always says that like the snooze button is the dream killer.
Yeah.
Something along those lines.
Oh, wow.
You know, I've never ever hit snooze my entire life.
Wow.
On your alarm?
I didn't even know it was a thing.
Oh my goodness.
Like I just never knew snooze was a thing. I thought you've got one alarm, that's my only shot bliss if I fall asleep. And then I found out snooze was, it sounds stupid. I knew snooze was a thing, but I never comprehended until people started telling me that they set like 10 alarms and I hit snooze and then snooze. I was like, wait, what?
That was me.
Because I didn't even think I didn't realize I could set multiple alarms.
But you know what's funny? Just jumping, firstly, that's very impressive. And that's crazy.
It isn't like, oh, I've never hit snooze. It was just like, I just realized I've never used
You wear that badge of honor, Byron. That's very impressive.
I will now.
So just touching on that, when you said, oh, I never set multiple alarms, I was 100% one of those people. When I was in uni, I had a 7 a.m. lecture. How is that legal? Like, and so I would set like 8, 9 back-to-back alarms to make sure I would wake up to get to this lecture. Interestingly, now in the past 2 years, because I've done so much to work on my daily routine, to do things in my day that I love, to start a job that I love, to do things that I love, to live a life that fulfills me and gets me excited, it is now a pleasure to get out of bed because I'm excited for the day ahead.
Yeah.
That rhymed. And so what's really interesting with the idea of waking up, if you're waking up for something that you don't want to do or you don't enjoy, obviously it's going to make it a lot harder, but bringing it 360, the walk that we did, when that alarm went off at 3:30, I did not want to get out of bed. That was something I did not want to do. So I think there's also a lot
I was excited.
I loved it.
I was like jacked.
I came downstairs like,
I woke up with like half an hour before my alarm.
Keep in mind, we only had like three and a half hours sleep
as well. Yeah. Which is crazy, the fact that we did it. Anyway, but I think there's a lot to say in learning to push through the times when you don't want to do the things you want to do, like coming back to the idea of like waking up in the morning and then actually going out and going to the lecture or doing the walk, whatever it might be, because then you set the reference that you can do it and then you set the habit that you can do it again.
And that's where how I was able to do 5:30 club is I really enjoyed it. I love the first hour of my morning.
Have you explained what 5:30 Club is?
You just meet at a cafe at 5:30 in the morning. This cafe is all around Australia, but the one I went to was half an hour away from me, which is why I woke up at 4:55, which gave me 5 minutes to get ready, and I'd leave and drive for half an hour, park the car, then I'd do an hour of like reading. And so number one, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the ride because I'd listened to a podcast. So rather than dread the car ride, I got to listen to a podcast. Then I enjoyed the hour because I was reading a really good book. And so for me, it's like if you struggle to wake up, read like a really good book, you're excited. Because you know, every time you wake up, you got to keep reading that book. So that was a big thing for me.
Well, that's like finding value in the whole experience.
It's
like
shifting
most
people
mindset,
would
just see it as just being at the cafe for that hour. But you said like you loved the drive. Like most people dread the journey there. They dread the bus ride into work or whatever it is. But if you can find a way to like find value in the entire process, then you're winning.
It's one of the questions that Dale has that I love that I now ask every day is like, what can I do today to find joy? Like, where can I find the joy? So whenever I struggle with a task, like even on the walk, like I think it was maybe just after the halfway mark when I'd said no to your mum and I was like, I'm staying. I remember asking myself internally, like, where can I find the joy? How can I make this joyful? And that's when I switched from love you, David. I had Goggins in my ear the whole time, but that's when I switched from Goggins to like a hype girl sexy playlist. And I was like listening to Doja Cat screaming in my ear, like, okay, I got this, Doja, I got this. It was like, okay, I could find some element of joy or excitement or pleasure in what I was doing, which made it easier to do.
That's why I was saying, like for me, the walk was just fun because I was just chatting with people. We were like listening to music. We're just walking. It was sunny. It was out. I didn't ever focus on the 80 kilometers. Like obviously it was in the back of my mind. But yeah, and then that's a metaphor for life, I really think. Like the one step at a time, right? How do you achieve something? One step at a time.
Yeah.
It's good to have big goals like the 80 kilometers. But I remember at the beginning when we could see the Harbour Bridge, it was so far. It was like this big. Like what is this? 4 centimeters?
Yeah.
It was in the distance. It was so far away. And I was like, that's not even the halfway point.
Yeah.
And then we got to the Harbour Bridge. I was like, holy crap, we're here.
Yeah.
And then we kept going.
And then we went around. I remember you said again, like we were just there.
And then we went around and we looped and we could see where we were. It was directly across from us, the water. And I was like, that's so far.
And it's
I never would have imagined we could get there, but it's just one step at a time.
It's amazing though how like visual representations can be the enemy, but also like be encouragement. Like prior to being at the Harbour Bridge, it was daunting. It was scary.
Correct. Yeah.
Once you'd passed it, you're now looking at the same bridge. The bridge hasn't changed. It's just your perception of the bridge has changed. And now it's like, oh my goodness, look how far we've come. This is amazing.
And that's like the, how do I make it fun? That's like brand story and empower you, the civic video story. You know, like I had to carry videos, but how do I make it fun? How can you make the walk fun? Do it with people you enjoy. That's why I think I had to do it with someone. If I really wanted to push myself and do it alone, I'd do it. I definitely don't think it'd be as enjoyable.
Do you think you'd get more growth out of it though? Because there'd be more discomfort.
Yeah, there might be a lot more internal. Yeah, I think I would.
I think 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's not even a question.
Yeah.
For me, anyway.
I don't think I would have done it. If I had done it with such a little preparation like I did for this walk, first of all, I wouldn't have booked it so early because I'm so slammed right now with the program about to start and everything. So I would have prepped longer. I would have started doing world walks and stuff. But I also know I learned by getting thrown in the deep end. Like for the last 10 years, that's everything I've ever achieved is just by doing it without much prep. Like still prepping it, but just doing it. Like my beta program was so I winged the whole thing. Like I absolutely winged the whole thing. I was not prepped at all, but I got there. And same with the walk, just throw me in there, I'll figure it out. I either complete it or I don't. And if I don't complete it, I gave it my best shot. I did want to ask a question though. I mean, maybe Annie's already answered it, the sliding door moment, but what was your lowest point or what was the point where you were like, for you on the walk? Stick around for part 2, which is going to come out next week, where we unpack this in much more detail. We'll see you then.